Today I'm going to be talking about human workflow with repair and resubmit. For any of you that don't know, I'm Stephen Thomas. I run the community site biztalkgurus.com. Here's our standard slide. We have a book, 23% off. I wonder how they came up with 23%. Actually, seems like an odd percentage. But anyways, 23% off until the 17th of September. And what we're talking about today specifically relates to Chapter 10 of the book, which is repair and resubmit with human workflow. So as I started working on this chapter, I realized that I have a lot to learn as it relates to technology outside of BizTalk Server. I use a lot of different pieces of technology in this solution. We have SharePoint 2010, which is used to host a customer list. We have Workflow 3.5, which actually runs inside SharePoint. And then we have Workflow 4, and then at Fabric. So a lot of different pieces of technology play into this. If you look at the book inside the solution where I outline it step by step, I break everything out into separate sections, and you don't actually have to build out the SharePoint piece if you don't want. I give you a test app for that. The Workflow 4 piece of it is about 100 steps. The SharePoint piece is about another 100 steps on top of that. So if anybody does build it out and gets it to work, please send me an email. I'll congratulate you personally. Not that it's complex, it's just a lot of steps and a lot of things to learn. So I worked on this chapter probably over a course of probably about 2 months or so. And then we did some edits following it up. So I just thought it was neat to kind of outline all the different places that I was in the world when I worked on this chapter. I travel a lot for work, so I get the chance to be in a lot of different cities. Yep. Oh, I was in a lot of different hotels, so there's multiple hotels here. But some of the notable ones was Las Vegas, Nevada. Being independent, when I don't have a project, I don't get paid, so I just get to hang out at home. Well, I have a really nice wife who said, okay, you're not working, just work on your book for this week. And I said, okay. I got a coupon for 4 free nights in Vegas. I'm just going to go work there. And she said, sure, go ahead. Yeah, I had to pull her leg a bit. But yeah, she let me go off to Vegas all by myself. And unfortunately, I spent most of the time in the hotel room, you know, working through the demo and stuff like that. Taking a break every now and then, go do some gambling. But didn't win anything, unfortunately. Another notable place is Hyderabad, India, and Thailand and Dubai. You know, we were down there just relaxing. Hyderabad was work, unfortunately, but I'm not sure working on the book while you're sitting on the beach is really considered working, but either way, there's some beach time baked into this as well. Then all the editing was in the Caribbean at the Grand Cayman Islands. So let's talk about what makes a human workflow different from what we typically think of as a workflow. So we generally would think of a workflow as something that interacts with another system. So it's generally just runs off, does its own thing. We don't have to mess with anything. But what makes a human workflow different is right there. It's me. I'm the human factor to the side of your integration and your workflow. And what am I? Well, I'm unpredictable. I'm unreliable. I make mistakes. Definitely forgetful. Assuming I spell everything right. I can't spell. I can't type, and I definitely like to sleep a lot. So, yes, that was just yesterday. My wife can validate all those, and she claims that this was like 4 slides worth of data. I cut it down. But what this means is it has interesting challenges for us when we need to get approvals and do interactions with human beings as compared to systems. So because I might be on vacation, you need an approval for me for a purchase order. You need to have a way to work around that and move on to something else. So it's that human factor that typically makes our workflows long running. Some of these can span days, weeks, or months, and allows us to have to be able to account for the human mistakes that are made, which is I put in somebody's email address incorrectly, and then I need to repair and resubmit that data. A lot of times I want to keep the same workflow going, so that I have traceability into that process. If I started a new loan application every time I corrected loan application data, Well, I'd lose out on how many loans I had in flight at any given time. So repair and resubmit into human workflows is pretty important. So I came up with a fictitious company. It's called Bowl for Buddies. I sure hope you guys have bowling in Sweden. You have bowling? Okay, you roll the ball. So Bowl for Buddies is a small charity, and it's a nonprofit group. So just because they're nonprofit doesn't mean that they don't have money to spend on technology and consulting. They just, their goal is to go out, like get a group like this who wants to do a bowling event. You go out door to door, collect donation information. You turn in the donation slips to the office, and then you go out and you hold your bowling party. And at the end, the people that have pledged money will get either an email or a mailed letter saying, okay, you donated $1 per pin. This group bowled and got 20,000 pins. Now give us $20,000 kind of deal. So today, they collect all that donor information and store it in an Excel sheet. How many people have walked into a client and see a lot of their business is ran in Excel? Definitely, definitely. So this is very common where we see a lot of data stored in Excel sheets. These are sometimes hard to share. They're stored all over the place, occasionally get lost, hard to update, etc. So right now, the data collection process and sending out notices and tracking payments is all a manual process. So right now, when a bowling event's done, a volunteer will go through, calculate how much everyone owes, send them an email, send them a letter. Well, how many people don't pay is hard to track. And when people pay, sometimes they don't return like their name correctly, so it's hard to match up. So at the end of the day, it's hard for Bowl for Buddies to know how much money they have to donate to other organizations based on all this in-flight information. They don't know how much is supposed to come in. They don't know how, they don't have a way to project their bowling events, nothing like that. Also, they found that when they have wrong information, it's hard for them to realize it in a timely manner and correct it. It might be a month later before they realize they had the wrong email address for somebody. So fixing that can sometimes be painful. Given that they're a small nonprofit company, they don't really have an IT department. They might have a few volunteers here and there, or maybe one person on a part-time salary that helps them out. So with that, they don't really have an IT budget. So they need to make decisions very carefully when it comes to software and hardware that they want to implement. They do have an existing website that's hosted remotely, and they plan to eventually be able to take collections and donations through that website. So after further analysis, we came up with some facts based on this Bowl for Buddies scenario. We realized that they are making an investment in getting SharePoint 2010, as well as Office 2010. They're going to be moving their Excel sheets into a shared donor list in a SharePoint list. So that way, multiple volunteers can all share this information and have a central place to keep track of who's paid and who is not paid. They also are adding an external email and payment service to be able to standardize their emails and payment collection process. These external providers provide WCF services that they're able to consume. They can also call them up and send emails, but they also have interface via WCF. So as we look at what this really boils down to, is we have a few key sets of requirements. So first off, we want to make the process more repeatable. So bowling event A has the same process as bowling event B, so that everyone can expect a consistent experience when working with Bowl for Buddies. We also need a better way to identify when we have bad data, a way to fix that data, and then a way to recontact that person to tell them that they have bad data or make sure they get their donation request. We also would like a way to be able to understand at any given time how much money is owed to us from our external vendors or our external donors. How many in-flight requests do we have? And last, well, Bowl for Buddies right now is just in one location, but they might want to expand down the road and have other subsidiaries that also offer the Bowl for Buddies concept. So whatever we build out here, we want to make sure it can be leveraged by other offices in the future. So as we think about what Bulfer Buddy needs, we realize that, well, they pretty much need a workflow technology. They need something that they can model their business process of a donation request and use that in a repeatable manner time and time again. So as we look at the technologies Microsoft has to offer, we came up with basically two different choices. We came up with BizTalk Server and then Workflow with App Fabric. Now, we probably could have threw custom code in there, but given the fact that Workflow is a framework on top of the custom code, I didn't even consider a custom written solution. Yes? Why SharePoint 2010? SharePoint 2010 is used in the solution. It was given as like a fact that they're getting SharePoint 2010. SharePoint itself isn't going to be an implementation choice. It'll make sense in a second when I show you the architecture diagram. So, but that's a good question. Good question. Here's the logical architecture. Well, actually, first, anything other than SharePoint 2010 that we think might want to be on the list? No. Okay. Good. Okay. So here's a logical architecture that we came up with as solution developers for this client. We know we have a data input source of SharePoint, and eventually we want to have a data input source of website. By having two separate data import sites, it makes it better for us to pull out any workflow logic out of one of these. So SharePoint 2010 supports workflow 3.5. So we could have built a workflow inside SharePoint that would be able to read off our customer list and make external service calls. We actually do that as part of the demo. But then when we add the website down the road, they can't really leverage those SharePoint workflows very easily. So by abstracting out the workflow logic into a generic workflow, we now have the ability that any other system we add down the line can easily call that workflow. So even if we, say, replace SharePoint, we liked Excel so much so we want to bring it back, we can still have a way to call this generic workflow and not be tied to SharePoint. So we have our two different input points through our service layer. We have our generic workflow, and then we have our notification service, which it can communicate back to either our website or SharePoint, and then we have our email service, which will communicate off. I didn't show our external payment provider in this screen. So as we think about our two different implementation technologies, we're really looking for who's going to best fit from service layer on down. Okay, because we have the website and SharePoint are going to be fixed points. So we think about BizTalk Server having a lot of out-of-the-box rich adapters. So we have SharePoint adapters. We could maybe use that to pull data off our SharePoint lists. We have SQL adapters. So when we add a website, we'd be able to maybe query data out of that website. We can expose WCF endpoints as well, so our website can make calls into us. We also have our orchestration engine, where we would be able to have our workflow, our repeatable process for every single payment and donor request. And we also have admin tooling for tracking and monitoring. So one would imagine that we would model each donor message, each donor payment, as a single orchestration. We'd be able to do a query and see how many, you know, dehydrated orchestration instances we have and get an idea of the number of requests we have out. We could promote total donation amount as a promoted property. We'd be able to do queries into there to find out the amount of data we have, amount of donation dollars we have out. So BizTalk is going to be able to give us a lot of the features that we're looking for. Now, some of the cons when we think about BizTalk Server, well, it can kind of be expensive for a small company. Now, there's not everyone needs the Enterprise Edition, but even at the regular Standard Edition price, it's still a little bit more expensive than a generic Windows license. But most importantly, what I like to make sure people think of is you just don't build your BizTalk solution and then leave for the day. You have a lot of management and maintenance costs associated with your BizTalk server. It's not always obvious when you get a routing failure what that really means to even other IT professionals. So I definitely wouldn't consider BizTalk really easy to maintain or support. So let's look at what a workflow app fabric-based solution would represent. Again, workflow has our workflow processing logic that we'd be able to model our donor process. Most likely, we'd be able to leverage our existing hardware. We know we're going to get SharePoint in-house, so we could probably leverage that SharePoint box to host this workflow. We know we're going to have a lower cost because there's no licensing fees associated with either of these technologies. And we know using AppFabric for hosting, and as Richard showed earlier, we have these custom tracking profiles that we'd be able to track both our outstanding orchestrations and even data inside those orchestrations if we wanted to. So what are some of the costs of workflow in AppFabric? Well, first off, it's a brand new technology. A lot of people are just learning it. And there's always risks associated with, while it's technically V3, it's still kind of V1 of the new release of workflow and definitely V1 of AppFabric. So you always have that to think about. You still are going to have a learning curve, although I like to think of it as a smaller learning curve. It's a little more obvious to people that, like Bull for Buddies that already have a website, what errors mean inside IIS, which is what you would see in an AppFabric-based solution. They're not going to see things like routing failures, for example. So let's take a look at what we came up with for our final solution. We came up with the workflow in AppFabric as the final solution to this problem. It was primarily because of the lightweight administration. So if we looked at, we know they're getting SharePoint 2010. If Bull for Buddies was also already buying BizTalk Server or Microsoft sponsored them a license, I still wouldn't even say that's the right choice for them, simply because maintaining and learning how to run BizTalk efficiently and effectively is a pretty complex task. Even running a solution that's IIS-based is still going to be a learning curve for somebody. But I think right now, it's more generally accepted to find resources that would be able to support this type of solution. So we have a solution that looks like this. I've separated out the services from SharePoint in this diagram. In my demo, it's actually both running on the same box. So this is our application server that has our core workflow, our generic workflow. Over here, we would have SharePoint. And inside SharePoint, we're still going to leverage the workflow technology that SharePoint offers. Like I said, it runs 3.5, which in my book, we do everything in 100 steps for our core workflow. It's like 70 steps just to get a 3.5 workflow to make an external service call. So that should give you an idea of how greatly improved our user experience is in 4.0. And in addition to that, we have the additional tracking available to us in AppFabric. All more reasons why this approach of SharePoint calling into a 4.0 workflow is going to work better for us. Then, of course, I show our external payment provider there. So I'm going to dive into the demo in just a second. There's three different steps involved in this whole process. First is creating the SharePoint list. Next is building the SharePoint workflow. And lastly is creating the core workflow service. I'm going to start off first by actually running through the demo end-to-end so you can see it work. I'm going to dive quickly into the SharePoint workflow and then more deeply into the core workflow. Here we go. This is our, I should have put a fancy bowling picture up there. This is our Bull for Buddies SharePoint list. One thing to keep in mind before you go out and say I want to build a SharePoint site, is SharePoint 2010 only runs on a 64-bit architecture. So you have to have a 64-bit VM, which isn't good when you're just using Microsoft VM player. What is it, VMware or VM? Virtual PC, yes, because Virtual PC doesn't support 64-bit OSs. So like VirtualBox is what I use to actually host my VMs to build this out. So I simply created a SharePoint list here called Donation Customers. Nothing special in creating the list. I simply just added a new SharePoint list. I go through it all step by step in the book. I'll save you guys the agony. I'm going to come here and simply add a new item. I'm going to leave ID in sent boxes empty. Let's say Steven. Doesn't matter what data I put in here. I'm going to give $3. For, oh, we'll have bowling score later. we'll let it now. Then I'm simply going to save this. I'm going to create a couple different records here. Another one is Steven 2. And this time, in part of the system, we have two different things that we check for. One is going to be that the email message is sent correctly. If not, we do a notification. We have a second step, which is, do we receive our payment? If not, we want to send a notification. In this case, when I talk about notifications, it's notifications back to a volunteer that this specific activity has occurred. So if my email system returns an error, I want to come back, update my SharePoint list with that error information so a volunteer working this SharePoint list can see that and then either call the person or correct an invalid email address. So when I talk about notification, that's what I mean. Put a junk phone number and a bowling score and save. So I created a couple different records here. And you'll see over here on the right where you see donation list workflow, process donation customers completed. I'm going to drill down into this. And this is the SharePoint workflow running for this record. You can see here it says workflow started, and then it says new record completed. So since we're doing repair resubmit, the first time I enter a record, we see new record completed. When we look back on the donation customer list, we'll see that there's a sent flag that is sent to yes. So as soon as there's probably more elegant ways to do this, but I did it through flags so we can easily see what's going on. I set the sent flag to yes when that initial workflow completes. That workflow is making a WCF call into our generic workflow, which is then starting a process. Much like Richard showed how it returns a token, that workflow returns a message that says, hey, I started. And then in that case, we know that this process is occurring. We update our sent flag to yes. You can see here I already got an error response back. So inside that workflow, once it's started, the first thing it does is try to send the email. I've set up the process so any email address that starts with an F, it's going to instantly fail. So this error information here is returned from processing on our, if we had these separate from SharePoint and application box, this is returned from our application box calling back into SharePoint and doing an update to this service. Now, making updates into SharePoint is extremely straightforward. You just have to understand their query language logic, which is a little tricky, but I go through all that in the book code. So this is a failed payment, failed email. The other thing I do is if the email is successful, then I give you a period of time to actually make the payment. I actually have it set up to do 2 minutes for purposes of the demo, so this top one should be erroring out shortly. While I'm waiting for that, I'm going to add another new item. Steven 3. Make sure it's a good email address. Just put junk data in here and save that. And you can see, now I have my no payment was received in a set amount of time. So these are notifications from our workflow to our donation list of what's happening with that donor record. So now our volunteers would be able to work these errors and make corrections as needed. Now, I started a new workflow with ID 25. I have a sample tool in here that simulates our external payment processor. So for this example, I had a successful email address that would send me an email, assuming with a link to pay for my donation amount. I'm going to come in here and put 25 for my user ID. I have a box to simulate a failed payment if I want. In this case, I want to process the payment. Now, this tool is making a WCF call back into our core workflow, doing correlation based on that user ID, calling the method payment, I think it's like get payment data, and updating the workflow for that user that he has paid. Now, then inside that workflow, I call the notification process again, which is going to update our SharePoint list that this user has paid. So it's up. Hopefully we see a paid. And we see right there now user is paid. So paid equals yes. And all this is totally abstracted from each other. So let's go ahead and take a look at what this looks like. So we had two different ones here that are in the error status. And let's take a look here in IIS inside our App Fabric. This is our App Fabric dashboard that we saw yesterday. And we see we have, some of these are from me running it earlier this morning, even just right before I came up here. We have a workflow. This is still refreshing. I have this at the scope of this top level human workflow scope. So it's going to capture all the activity underneath there, including my email and notification service. So I'm just going to narrow down right to the core workflow. And we can see what's going on just inside our core workflow. So we have six items over here that are idle. I'm going to click on that. Remember, we saw settings yesterday where we could set a timeout, a time value, where this will remove from memory and go into the idle status. So that's what these represent. And we can see here that we have process payments. And this is from just a few moments ago. My time on here is 4:18 a.m. So this was at 4:12 and 4:13. We can see that we had these payment orchestrations that are payment workflows that are now outstanding. And we see we have two here that correspond to our two records here that have not completed processing yet. Now, we can very easily use our custom tracking profile to extract out the total donation amount and make that a queryable parameter. So we could write a query like that to tell us the amount outstanding that we are owed by these workflows that haven't completed yet. So let's go back into our actual code of this solution. So this is the overall total solution here. Everyone can download this. Even if you don't buy the book, you can still download the code. I won't go through the notification and email service. They're just simple WCF services. What it does allow you to do inside our notification service is set a flag on whether you want it just to write to the event log or actually update SharePoint. So if you want to run this without SharePoint server, which I think a lot of people will, you'd want to just go flip that flag to false, and it's just going to write to the event log instead of actually update SharePoint. But let's take a look at what this process payments core workflow actually looks like. So the first thing we do is we're going to receive our request. Our request is simply called get data. And we don't receive a whole lot of data. I've just defined them here as parameters. And I assign them to local variables inside our workflow. Then I have a little event log helper here. Just to make it easier for everyone to see, I write event to the event log that says, hey, you know, I've started. I get a total donation calculation. So I calculate the bowling score times it by your donation amount. So now my workflow knows the total worth of this this donation. Then I send a generic response back to the caller. So the caller knows that, you know, my orchestration process has started. Now, much like Richard showed, from here on out, there's no direct communication from our SharePoint site to this workflow anymore, unless it needs to make an update, which we'll see later. So right now, this is done with this communication with SharePoint, and this workflow is off running on its own. So now we get down here, and you see a little flowchart shape. And this is new, a new activity in Workflow 4, where we can define a flowchart a flow of instead of a sequence process. So we double click to drive down into this, and here we can see kind of the guts of what our process and how it's modeled. The flowchart allows us to have a start at the top and then have different paths through the system, and then everyone can go back to steps they've already done in the past. So in our case of wanting to receive updated data from a user, we have this step here, receive updated data. And right now it only works for when you update a email address. So we have, let's start at the top. So we send out an email, we get a notification. That notification is stored in a variable that's used in this switch shape. So if we look at the switch shape, the expression is email result. I'll show you in a second where this is set, but essentially, the output of this activity, there's many shapes inside here, but the output of this is logically setting the email sent variable. Once that variable is set, This switch statement reads that variable, defines whether it was successful, in which it's now going to expect to receive a payment. It decides if it's an email error or if it decides if it's a timeout. If it decides it's successful, it comes over here to the receive payment set of activities. Again, a bunch of different activities under here. And then again, there's another variable that's set. And this one, it's payment received. It's either true or false. In the case that it's true, we want to send a success notification. Again, this notification is going back to SharePoint in our case. If this is false, we want to send an email notification that something is wrong. This email notification actually goes back to SharePoint as well. So in our case where our email is timed out or errored, we also come down here to our send email notification. So in this case, even if my send email is bad and or my receive payment notice is bad, they both end up at the same step in our process. So by simply dragging these different shapes and lines around, I can reuse blocks of logic that I've already coded. So if this was being built inside of BizTalk server, it'd be more challenging to get this same kind of flow. We'd have to probably do multiple orchestrations, probably with a call orchestration shape, to achieve this, which we achieved by simply dragging a line here. Then once I send my email notice, which is again an update SharePoint, I want to wait and receive updated data. So inside here, I have another receive shape that's going to correlate on our user ID and wait for updated data from our SharePoint list. Now, this could sit here for days, weeks, months, however long it takes a person to update the SharePoint list and end up making a call back into this workflow. So let's dive into some of these shapes and take a look at the composite activities. So again, at the top, I have my event log helper, which is going to kind of tell me what's going on with my process in the event log. I do some simple assign shapes, which isn't really too exciting. Then I have this send email, which this is like we showed yesterday. I added a WCF reference to my external email service. And here I'm simply calling that, passing in these parameters that I've defined above in my assign shapes. The response back to that is simply my email response. So I'm going to get this response back, store it directly in that variable. The flow will end out of this sequential workflow and return back to my flowchart to then go to the next step in the process based on evaluation of this variable. So let's go back and let's assume. So you have these nice breadcrumbs. I don't know if you've seen those at the top that tell you where you're at in your workflow, that you can simply click on them and jump back to any different step in the process. So let's assume that this was successful and I want to receive my payment notice. Let's see if you can see here. I used the parallel shape again like we saw yesterday. On the left side, I want to set a timeout. So I have a certain amount of time I want this process to wait to receive confirmation from our external payment service. So remember, the payment service is a disconnected process. Somebody else runs that. They're going to send us a WCF request, a WCF message, and tell us that this user paid. If they don't send it in X amount of time, in our case 2 minutes, we want to take action, which we do inside our flowchart. So here we have our timeout, where we have a delay of 2 minutes, some assign pieces that are doing our setting of our variables for our error message and our routing in our flowchart. One thing that I want to point out here is, here I set this variable called hit delay. So one of the really nice features inside the parallel shape is, by default, it's going to wait for every one of these branches to complete. So by default, it's going to wait for both my timeout branch and for my get payment request branch to complete, which in our case is definitely not what we want. We don't want to sit here and wait for this payment to arrive because data might be bad, it might not ever happen. So it has this concept of a complete condition, which is a Boolean value that we can set, that if we set this condition or hit this condition in any one of our parallel activities, we instantly exit this parallel shape. So in this case, when I hit this timeout, I set hit delay to equal true, and we're going to exit this parallel shape and no longer be waiting for our response message or receive our message from our payment confirmation service. So that's one of the neat features of that parallel shape. Down here, I have some simple if logic. I won't go through all that. So now we received our payment. We got our payment back. It was true. I want to send my success notification. Again, I just make a simple WCF call. That's what this block down here is, to my notification service. I have a single notification service that handles both success and error conditions by logic inside there. So I see here above, I'm setting this as a success criteria. But let's look at what happens if any of this fails. So if either my email service fails or my payment notification isn't received in time, I dive into here. And again, I'm setting this as an error condition and calling the send notification service. But the difference here is after this step, I directly go to my receive updated data activity. Probably could have combined those together. I mean, logically, they're together. But separated out this way, it's easier to understand for someone to understand what's going on. So once I send out a notification and am expecting logically to receive updated data, I simply have my receive shape in here. And this is going to do like we saw yesterday, where I've already initialized the correlation back before. And you see down here, I'm going to correlate with something. And then there's a property associated here, which is actually the ID of the user back from SharePoint. So now when SharePoint makes a second call with the same ID, it actually makes a second method call. So it's easier for it to know where to go. But passing in the user ID is going to route that updated data to this orchestration. So we don't start a new process. Now, just want to highlight why it's important to have a single orchestration for this, or single workflow. There I am calling it orchestration. Single workflow allows us to track the amount of time from end to end that a single process is happening without having to do any sort of logic. So you could have a tracking table where you track the first time I sent this payment, blah, blah, blah. But by using one workflow for the lifetime of the user or for that donor request, you know exactly how long it's taking for that process to complete. And then you'd have to clean these up if eventually a user doesn't want to pay or something to that effect. But it's very easy to now do a query inside App Fabric to tell you what's going on with how many requests and everything you have out there. So that's kind of the core reason why it's important to have this go back into the same workflow. So then I just send back a generic response when SharePoint calls back into here. And that does it for this flowchart. Let's take a look at what the SharePoint workflow looks like. So when you want to have a workflow built inside SharePoint, there's a specific project type you select. And then as you walk through, you tell it what SharePoint you want to go against. Then it queries that SharePoint and gives you a drop-down list, essentially, of the different lists available. So you're essentially binding, I'll use that term loosely, a workflow to a SharePoint list, which will then fire on change event, essentially, of items in that list. Now, there's different configuration parameters, different things you can do around that, but that's kind of the gist of it for our purposes. I go through it all step by step in the book, but essentially, this is our .NET 3.5 workflow that is then based in SharePoint. So when I build this, it actually deploys it out onto SharePoint server to be ran there. You can see here the look and feel is dramatically different than what we had in 4.0. And like I said, it seemed to be a lot more code. So at the beginning here, I do that logging. Remember we saw on the steps where it said like new record started. That's the kind of logging I'm doing here. And then I'm simply have an if-else branch that says, if this is the first time I receive this record, which remember I used that sent flag, I'm going to call get data, which was my entry point into my workflow. If it's that record's already set, I'm going to assume it's an update. And then I'm going to call update record. And these are our WCF service calls here. And just to give you an idea, this is all the different configuration I had to do to set this up. You have to define all these different types. You have to set all these parameters over here on the right. all these channels, all these activities, all the you bind data values back and forth. And that's why this was built in like seven different countries. Because this .NET 3.5 is much more labor intensive than experiences we have now in .NET 4.0. A little disappointed that SharePoint 2010 didn't have .NET 4.0 integration, but I'm imagining we'll see that coming in the future. Then at the end, I just do some simple logging. One thing to note here is, let's see if I can, that's not what I'm looking for, is I added exception handling inside our workflow. Wherever it went. Right here. So if there's any sort of faults that occur in our process, if our WCF service is down, or if for whatever reason we terminated a workflow and updated the data for that user, it won't be able to go back into the running workflow. So in those cases, this gets logged back into our SharePoint list so that a volunteer would be able to see that and be able to make updates. Let's take a quick look at what we really did here in our SharePoint. So inside SharePoint, it really wasn't anything exciting. We simply just created a list. You would do that up here under lists. I clicked customize form. It actually opens an InfoPath form experience where I was able to create all these different IDs, names, emails. Allows us to define what fields are required, what fields are not required, stuff like that. So it's pretty straightforward to actually come in and create these SharePoint lists. I go through all that in detail in the book as well. Kind of dry, not very exciting here, but this should give you an idea of what goes on here. Just for the sake of it, I'm going to update one of these records, and let's see if we can actually get his payment to process. Come here to edit item. Going to just change the email to remove the F. I'm going to set the reprocess flag. That's how we tell the 3.5 workflow in SharePoint to actually make the external call to the user. There might be data in here we might change from time to time that we don't want it to actually go back to the workflow. So I set the reprocess flag. Again, probably more elegant solutions, but this was the simplest to actually show in the book. So we see now that we have our workflow in process. And it says update record completed. So this followed the other side of our workflow branch, actually updated that user. Let's come back here. ID 24, I'm going to use my tool. 24, process payment. And we see we got a true result back from our core workflow service that it received our response. If for whatever reason that service was down, we wouldn't get a true response back from it. So it's just confirmation. And let's come over here, and now we see, yes, true, that user is paid. So we repaired and resubmitted that user. It went back into the same workflow, and then it completed. And you could do this loop as many times as you wanted if you kept correcting user data and submitting it through the same process. Just to show you what's going on here, I log all the events, you know, in that event log shape. So as you're working through this on your own, you can just look in your event log, and you can see notification service being called, payment system being called, email service being called, and be able to not have to learn how to track in that fabric before you can figure out what's going on with our workflow. Come back here to App Fabric real quick, show you what's going on here. And now again, I'll eventually extend this to show how to be able to query into the tracking database, the monitoring store, and get the value of the total donation requests that are still outstanding. But we will be able to show here quickly and easily how many outstanding number of requests we have. It's showing 5 right now. Again, you got to remember this is from some of my earlier demos I've ran this morning as well. So with that, let's get back to my slides. Okay. So to summarize, when we have a human workflow versus a traditional workflow, we have the human factor, which means we have to account for long-running processes, and we have to account for unpredictability because of people like me. We don't know what could happen in the process. We saw how using the new flowchart activity can help make our activities more fluid and easy to make loops and repeatability in our logic that we need to reuse. And we took a quick look how SharePoint 2010 still uses .NET 3.5, but even though it still uses 3.5, by having SharePoint call into .NET 4.0 workflows, we can still leverage the features available to us, you know, inside App Fabric. With that, is there any questions? Does anybody think BizTalk would have been a better solution for this? Can be honest. No. Okay. Can anybody can you understand the value in the flowchart activity and being able to repeat that logic around and around? And how this is pretty much a rather lightweight solution. But if I would have built it out in BizTalk, it probably would have been done in 3 countries just because of my experience with BizTalk would be able to build that out much quicker. But using Workflow and App Fabric is going to do everything we need. So, okay, no questions? Okay, thank you.